Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
It's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Place to go.
Show number 1218. Hi, how are you? The nastiness of Hurricane Florence now looks like it's going to smash Myrtle Beach right in the face. A sharp left turn in the storm's path, the storm's track, is pretty much unavoidable, according to all the computer models. And we'll talk about details on that coming up. I mean, I'm hoping if you know or love people down there that they've left. Wherever they need to go. Sleep in the car. Drive to Virginia. Just get out of there. Because if you're wrong, all you got to do is drive back. And if you're right, you can feel good about yourself. But if you're wrong and you stay, it's going to be a very long couple of nights. And who knows what with the flooding as the storm stalls off the coast. We're talking about Houston rain again. 35, 40 inches.
There's going to be people hunkering down, Steve. They're going to ride it out.
There are a few idiots there.
Yep.
I heard somebody say something that I'd never thought about, but they said they're staying behind because where they live is a retirement community, and there's going to need to be a lot of help afterwards. And so they want to be there to be helpful.
Well, I can't believe we're not getting old folks out of there.
I don't know. I'm assuming just by the nature.
Is that Stubborn Acres? Stubborn Acres? Is that the retirement home you're thinking of?
That's right. I would assume just by human nature that, or just human population, that there's going to be a percentage of people that stay behind. Right?
There's an interesting story. Well, a small one, we hope. There's an interesting story this morning. I think it was out of Wilmington where they said, we're not going in to help anybody if the winds are blowing more than 50 miles an hour. So, in other words, when it gets over 50, that's it. You're on your own. And they wait till the gusts and the winds, not the gusts, but the wind speed itself is under 50 before they go back in.
Is there a chance that this storm peters out?
Doesn't look like it.
Before it hits South Carolina?
Doesn't look like it.
Okay.
It's ugly. It's ugly. Wow, I almost went down a really dark road there for a second. Yeah. Sometimes the sensors are off at this hour. Top 6 at 6 coming up, Karen County. Bill O'Reilly, after 7 o'clock this morning. He has a new book out.
It's coming out in October.
And it's called Killing the SS. If you've seen the movie Operation Finale, which I've not yet. Anybody seen that?
No, I haven't.
Nobody on the show? Operation Finale, I want to see it. But this book is about chasing down all of the most heinous, hideous people of World War II, the Nazi criminals that escaped mostly to Argentina. Obviously, there's other things to talk to Bill O'Reilly about. I'm not going to spend a bunch of time talking to him about stuff that he won't answer because they're lawsuits. But I do have questions about the Me Too movement. I do have questions about whether or not Trump speed dials him. Kavanaugh's in the news. I mean, all of these things related to Bill O'Reilly, who now does a podcast every day, for those of you wondering what he's doing with his time.
Do you think that he told the president he was going to be on your show today?
I'm sure he did. There's no question. Trump's calling him every 10 minutes going, that guy hates me. Don't go on there. I don't hate Donald Trump. I don't know Donald Trump enough to hate him. I hate the fact that he's president.
They don't like you enough, though, at that administration, that it's kept your friends from being able to tour the White House, right?
Oh, well, there's that. Yeah, I forgot about that.
You're on somebody's list.
Paul Coit couldn't get into the White House because of me. He's just a nice fellow from London. Anyway, that's coming up, too, and the most valuable person on the planet. You excited about the Laver Cup, Miss Dennis?
Oh, I'm very excited. So we get to have Kevin Anderson on today at 7:50. He's a tennis player, for people that don't know, 6'8". He's ranked 5th right now, and his wife grew up in Glenview, Kelsey. She was played golf at U of I, and then Kevin went to U of I. So,
have they had really athletic babies yet?
Not yet. They have dogs, and their dogs have an Instagram account, and they bring them with them on his tour travels. Like, the dogs go everywhere.
I do all of my tennis by the 80s, so is he better or worse than Boris Becker?
He's
taller.
Yeah,
he's taller.
He hasn't been playing long enough, I guess, to say better, definitely...
What was the Asian kid who was really good in the 80s from Illinois, from America?
That had the Prince rackets?
Yeah.
Oh,
Was it Chang? Is he better or worse than Michael Chang?
Asian kid. How old are you?
No, but I could dance around it. I could be like, you know, the short guy with the white shorts and the gym shoes.
Was that dancing around it? The American Asian youngster with a tennis racket.
No, I couldn't remember his name. But you got it right away, right? Michael Chang.
Yeah.
Is he better or worse than Andre Agassi? What's his hair like? See, I have so many questions that are
and they're all important.
They're all important.
There's a great charity called Good Sports we'll hit later as well. Elise Glink's on the show, and Adam Burrish of the National Hockey League coverage. It's not just of your Chicago Blackhawks, but he's a rising broadcasting star, wouldn't you say that?
Yes, another one out of the ranks of the Blackhawks. Yes. How about that?
I'm told he's quite attractive. I personally, he's not my type, but he's funny, mm-hmm. and he knows hockey.
And how many Blackhawks have gone on to great heights on the national broadcast scene. I mean, you think JR and Eddie Olczyk, and here comes Adam Burrish now.
Is he more
or
less
Sharp
attractive?
Patrick Sharp did some last year.
He's taller than that Asian you mentioned.
Hey, Steve, can you have Dave Ennett give away tickets to this show, his favorite show that he likes to talk about?
Oh, Avenue Q.
I did see it. It's a good show.
What do you know about the show, Dave?
It's naughty. There's a high level of naughtiness.
It's naughty. It's very naughty.
Get the seventh caller who wants.
Sure, you want to do it right now?
Yeah.
Let's do it now. 312-981-7200 if you want those tickets.
Great way to kick off the show, right?
Yeah, why not? Be a winner. Joe, you want a break before we do the top six? Would that make you happy? I want to make you happy there, Super Joe.
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right, let's do that then.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks. With the top 666, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
The Avenue Q ticket winner, Dave, and word is this guy's naughty. It's Rick from Mount Prospect. Rick in Mount Prospect.
Enjoy the naughtiness, Rick.
Naughty.
Yes. And Rick, if you're freaked out and don't know why we're saying things like this, it's because Dave uses the word naughty when he talks about Avenue Q. And I find it funny when any adult male says naughty.
Did you work it into the broadcast on Saturday, Dave?
It was a naughty performance.
Coach Fitz have any naughty behavior?
You know, it wasn't the right time to do it.
Okay.
Tickets for Avenue Q, the modern laugh out loud comedy musical featuring sassy. Dave, give me a little sassy.
Sassy.
Sassy and lovable puppets. It's a racy crust. Give me racy, sassy, and naughty all in one second.
Racy. Sassy. Naughty.
Normally, you got to pay for that. It's a cross between South Park and Sesame Street, and winner of the Tony Triple Crown in 2004. Tickets at 773-325-1700 or mercurytheaterchicago.com. Millions of people in the Carolinas and Virginia are either on the move or they're hanging around. Soon to be wishing they were on the move as Hurricane Florence heads for the region, where it's expected to make landfall late Thursday night into Friday morning. With gales of 130 miles per hour. There's lots of older folks in Myrtle Beach. And, you know, some are very difficult to move medically. And people who are in hospitals and things of that nature. What do you do with those? I mean, it's scary stuff. We're watching it, and we'll continue to try to update you throughout the day. But again, I hope that the people you care about that you know in those areas are getting out. Next, a group of aldermen is pushing to ban horse-drawn carriages, citing safety concerns and questions about the horse's welfare. Yesterday, a city council committee says they'll consider an ordinance that would effectively end horse-drawn carriages by barring the renewal of licenses, which occurs for everybody in November.
That's bogus. That is a veiled attempt to get horse carriages off the road so you can go faster.
Is it about traffic? It's not a PETA thing?
I bet you it has everything to do with an alderman got stuck behind a horse carriage on Michigan Avenue, and they're like, nope, this needs to go. And the ghost of Burton Terris on this one. We got better things to do
than
horse-drawn carriage ordinances.
I don't understand the danger part. I'm not familiar with a lot of horse car accidents. Slipping on poo, I suppose, would be an accident.
I don't think I've ever reported a
right?
horse car accident.
You talk about traffic every day, all day.
They don't go with the flow of traffic, and they get the right to be on the road. And the problem, I would assume, is that a lot of traffic gets antsy, meaning people want to go around, double park, all that kind of stuff that happens could cause accidents around a horse-drawn carriage. That would be my assumption based on watching them and being behind horse-drawn carriages on a regular basis.
And what they leave behind.
And when it's 110 degrees outside and the horses are still doing their work outside, I mean, You have to ask, too, whether or not they like that or not.
Well, yeah, I don't know. But it's 110 degrees in the field they'd be in, too, right? So if they're properly
fed and
watered. Well, they could
have been in stable shade, right?
I don't know. I'm not against it
or
for
it. Why now, then, Steve? I mean, they've been doing this for 40 years.
It's not just why now, Justin. This has been going on for a while. People have been trying to get these horse carriages off the roads for a number of years now.
I mean, I don't know the story.
I was telling Super Joe, my sister, who's no longer married, when she got married, it was at Fourth Prez, which is at Michigan and Delaware, and she got into, on Delaware, one of those horse-drawn carriages right after the wedding. But because there was so much traffic, you know, you cheer them on and they get in, but then they weren't moving. And so, like, how long do you keep the cheering going?
Like the double goodbye.
Right. And then eventually we started talking to each other because they weren't making any progress.
That's great.
The other question to ask in this is, how many of us here has been in one of these, have actually paid to be in one of these?
I've never been in one.
I haven't either.
Me neither. So
it's usually tourists or weddings.
Yeah, but it's a huge thing for tourists.
Is it?
Yeah, Friday nights. You ever been downtown hanging around on Friday night? They're all
I know a lot of people get engaged. Rickshaw. Yeah, they like do
get that. A rickshaw.
Yeah, there's
you can get one of those up in Lake View.
Those bicycle ones.
The bicycle dudes. Got,
yeah.
Next. Chicago's hotel strike continues. 26 hotels now. Cambria workers walked off the job. A list of hotels downtown where workers are striking has 26. After employees at the Cambria Chicago Magnificent Mile walked off the job. I was talking to someone in the business about this yesterday, and I don't understand how you settle a strike like this, because there's not like president of hotels.
Yeah.
You have to negotiate with each hotel, right? Because there's a hotel workers union that they could belong to, but the hotels are owned by different people.
I would assume that the large hotels set the standard. Would be the ones if Hilton says this is what we're going to accept for the cost of our room service employees, then I think it would cascade down. Cambria is interesting because I just walked past there and I thought in my head, I'm like, look at all of these hotels around here striking and this one is not. And it made me think about union and non-union hotels, but to see that the workers have walked off in solidarity. That's. I wonder if that's going to happen to other hotels as well that are not part of this.
Well, between here and Illinois Avenue, we have what, three hotels? At the Lowe's, and you got 14 around us right here.
Yeah. The Hyatt, yeah.
Yeah, but they're not all in.
No, but like a good example would be the Swiss Hotel across the street here, possibly Aqua and the Radisson. I don't see the... So there are a lot of hotels in the area that are not part of whatever union is striking. And I would also say, I wonder just in, you know, how the market is changing, because we saw some Texans saying that the rates for hotels are going up because they're taking advantage of the fact that, you know, they have less, they have to pay different, more people or something like that. But
come on, it's supply and demand. Less rooms, you get to charge more. So. Next, several food words have been added to Merriam-Webster's online dictionary. Steve, you're vice president of food on the show. There are 840 new food words that have been added. There's avo, as a short for avocado.
Yes.
There's guac.
That's what we call it in our house, guac.
Zoodles? What are zoodles?
I've never heard that before.
Are those spiralized veggies?
Oh, I'm being told they're zucchini noodles.
That's what spiralized,
avo? I've never heard of avo.
That's what the kids call avocado. There's hangry.
Our boss, Stephanie, says hangry that constantly.
That's in Snickers commercial.
That's when you're hungry and angry all at the same time.
That's been around a while.
Yeah.
Really.
Webster's got to get it.
I can tell you right now, as a male, and this is a fact-based statement. If a woman is hungry, help her find food. There's no more dangerous creature on the earth than a hungry woman.
I like the last one in here, Marge.
Marg.
Oh, Marg?
Yeah, that's a Marg.
How about the margarine, right?
Is it marginal or margarine?
No, it's Marg, guys, like a margarita. Yeah.
Margarita.
Because they're food words.
We call it a Marg in our house. Pat drinks so many Margs that Catherine wrote a poem in school a few years ago about her dad drinking Margs.
About drunk daddy?
Yep. Yeah.
I'll have a Marg.
It even got into the details of the salted rim. I mean, it's
that's so sweet.
A lot of Margs getting drunk.
Three Margs and two guacs.
We call them Ritas.
Where's your sister?
You ever see the movie Idiocracy?
Yeah, right.
That's where we're headed.
A little Marg?
Well, we got one more. Bingeable.
Oh, boy.
Bingeable.
Bingeable.
How's bingeable a food word?
I thought that was TV shows more than...
Well, you binge on food, like eat an entire box of ho-hos.
Netflix and chill.
Ho-hos.
With your horse from your horse-run carriage. Am I out of time? No, I got one more? Okay, go. MGM offering a $500 donation to charity for each Las Vegas shooting survivor who waives a notice of a lawsuit. This may be the most ridiculous offer of a settlement I've ever seen. You're at a concert, you're minding your own business, you're having a good time, and all of a sudden shots ring out. You have a right to sue. You may not win. But if I say, listen, I tell you what, you sign this, I'll send $500 to a charity for you. Really?
Yeah, it's crazy.
No chips in the casino? I think that was six. That's your top six at six.
That's all today for the top six at six.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Anybody that knows me personally, knows the real Jason, who I am, that I'm not a racist. I would say, you know, you, if you are a racist on this job, in this city, it's going to come out. Nobody's going to want to work with you.
Please rise. Court is now in session.
Karen Conti, Sunday nights on 720 WGN. Pardon me, Karen. There, I'm better now. How are you?
Are you allergic to me? Are you allergic to me, Steve?
I don't know. I've got sort of a dry thing going on this morning. A little tickle in the throat. All right, this Laquan McDonald thing is obviously going to be bigger and bigger news as each day goes by. What are you following, and what's your take on it so far?
Well, it's interesting. They're picking jurors, and you know there was this hue and a cry that they weren't going to be able to pick an impartial jury. But my concern, from what I hear, again, I'm not in that room, and again, this jury selection process is different than most. Usually you have a whole room full of jurors, and there's a kind of a general poll, and the questions are asked in front of everyone. But this judge is taking them one by one in chambers, which is a good thing to make sure that they are being honest with him as to whether or not they have prejudices about the case. But my concern is that some of them are saying, yeah, I've seen the video, and I don't like it, or you know, I think he did something wrong, but the judge then is rehabilitating him, and that means, but could you really just come to this courtroom and make a decision that's impartial? Can you put that aside, even though you think he's guilty? Can you come right here and give it a fair shot? Now, if someone says, well, yes, would you want them on your jury to judge you when they've already voiced an opinion? I wouldn't. So I'm very concerned that this jury is still not going to be impartial.
You know, I've been through that process a couple of times, and most adults have gone through it one or two or three or four times. It seems like it'd be very intimidating to be brought in one by one into chambers.
I think so, too, and apparently the judge says to the jurors, like, look at Mr. Van Dyke and look him in the eye and tell him you can be fair. You know, I think that's a good thing that the judge is doing that, because you're ultimately going to decide the fate of a human being, and you want to humanize that person. But that is intimidating for the average person to know that, and I don't mean the average person, I mean someone who doesn't willingly come to the process and get paid to be part of it, to take off time and to make this huge decision. I think that's extremely intimidating.
Karen, the defense again filed another motion to move the trial outside of Cook County. They cited that this could cause a riot. If the jury comes back with a not guilty, that this could incite a riot. And they continue to do this, even though the judge has essentially, as Ryan told us yesterday, and told him to knock it off. Is there a strategy to persisting on this idea, even though the judge already said that's not going to happen?
Yes, there is. It's called laying the foundation for an appeal. And they have to do this because they have to keep an ongoing account of what's going on. Listen, there are 1,000 people out protesting. Half the jurors said that they had already made up their mind and were excused. So this motion that I read this morning was just adding to it, just saying, listen, even though people say that they can be fair, if that was preceded by, but I think he's guilty, then that's not an impartial jury. And they cited cases that lend themselves to that. And I think that they're just, you know, if this goes south, they want an appeal, and they want to be able to argue that this case should have been moved somewhere else.
And I would make an argument too, Steve, that if this is laying the groundwork for an appeal, and that we go through this as a city, and we go through this the justice system to find out whether or not this is guilty, not guilty on Jason Van Dyke, and then it gets overturned on appeal because of a technicality of whether or not it was in Cook County or not. That's even worse, right? Don't you think that would have such implications on the city? So it seems to me that that, you know, maybe they do have a point, and maybe that the judge shouldn't just be so hardline saying, no, move on, let's do this again.
It's a tough one. You know, it's tough to move a case because you have this balance. You have this, you need to be tried by a jury of your peers, and that generally means the people who live in your community. So if you take this and bring it to Kankakee or you bring it to Peoria, that's generally not deemed to be the jury of your peers. On the other hand, you're right. We have this huge case that is just such a heater case, and I wonder if these jurors are thinking, what if I acquit? What's going to happen? Is there going to be a ramification, not just for the city, but maybe for me? You know, that's a lot of pressure to put on a person who doesn't do this for a living. I agree with you.
How long is this trial going to go?
My guess is it's going to go fairly quickly, but I would say maybe 3 or 4 weeks. And there was talk, at least a little bit, of sequestering the jury. I think maybe some of the jurors were questioned about what their thoughts were on that. There's two ways to sequester. You can sequester during the entire trial, during the evidence portion. And then another way to do it is just during the deliberation portion. So we don't know. And that's a whole other layer of strain for a juror to, you know, basically take off their lives, live in a hotel, and be away from their family and their friends. And that's, you know, that's something that might happen.
Yeah, explain sequestration to people. Once you're sequestered, what's your life like?
From what I understand, it's different in different cases. I mean, there are some judges that will send manicurists in, and they bring movies, and they order pizza, and they do all kinds of things for the jurors that are nice to make them feel like, you know, they're at home.
Well, they're not putting them up at the peninsula, though. I mean, you know.
No, but, and it's expensive to do this, and that's why most judges do not sequester a jury. But, no, it's a strain, because you're with these people all the time, all day long. All you're talking about is the case. It causes strain. A lot of the jurors, and you saw this in the OJ case when they were sequestered for, what was that, 9 months. It was an incredible amount of time. They started bickering, and they started, you know, not liking each other, and that's hard to reach a verdict when you're constantly with people you don't know, and you haven't chosen to be their friends. So, you know, it's difficult.
So where does the judge come down? On what side? If the constitutional requirement is to grant the defendant a fair trial, but you probably can't do it here, and you don't want to move, and maybe if you lock the jury up, once you pick them, they're going to be okay. I mean, these are a lot of tough decisions for a judge.
They are tough decisions, and I find that the judges err on the side of keeping the case here in Chicago. And I don't really know why, because to me, I would err on the side of put it somewhere else. At least that argument is gone. And how difficult would it be even to bring in jurors from a different jurisdiction? Here, in this case, there's two parts of it. We've got jurors who have made up their mind because they saw the video, and we've got jurors who are walking through protests outside the courthouse. So, you know, even bringing jurors in probably wouldn't solve the problem. It probably would be that you'd send it off to another city. And don't forget that even before the 12th juror is sworn in, Van Dyke's lawyers can opt for a bench. We could go through this whole charade. Van Dyke's lawyers could say, you know what, I don't like this jury one bit. I'm going to opt for a bench. The jury is dismissed, and now we have a bench trial.
Karen, wouldn't that actually hurt their strategy to do that? They may end up doing that if they don't feel they have a impartial juror. But doesn't it hurt their attempt for an appeal, because it seems like they're setting it up on the fact that they can't get a fair trial because of a tainted jury pool?
You're right. You're absolutely right. But the thought is that you want to win a trial more than you want to set your appeal up, because an appeal is not a new look at the trial. An appeal is just on basic technicalities.
Yeah, you can't you can't plan for an appeal, right? I mean,
no, you don't want to be on appeal. You don't. You want to win
it the first time. Exactly. Texter says, sequestered in a murder trial in Cook County Motel was literally adjacent to a dump, and we shared rooms with other jurors. How can you force people to share rooms?
I don't like that one bit. That's interesting. You know, I haven't heard those stories.
That's what I would bring up if I was a juror. I said, listen, if you're going to sequester me, I'd like the Four Seasons and I'd like room service.
Room service from Gibson's, please, and a massage.
Right. Yeah. And if my do not disturb sign is up, I'm not coming into court today.
I just need a phone and a color TV. That's it.
Well, and that's another thing. They can't have their phones and their computers.
Yeah, right.
I mean, people are so addicted to that now. I mean, they can't read a newspaper, they can't go online, they can't go on Facebook, they can't do all the things that are part of their daily activity, and they start to feel very resentful for that, and sometimes they rush to judgment because they just want to get the heck out of there.
Brett Kavanaugh, the Supreme Court confirmation hearings, I don't know how much of it you saw, but you know the Supreme Court. What's your sense of this case?
Well, you know, I'm not sure I agree with his ideology or what we know of it, but he's a very well-qualified guy. I mean, you can't say he isn't. And his problem with the confirmation hearings is, first of all, we're in a very polarized environment. Of course, we all know that. But he has had history. You know, he's not a neophyte judge. He has ruled on things. And he's also worked for political operatives. So there's a lot of presumptions people are making because he's had these jobs that have gone to the right wing. And, you know, I get it. They're making their case. They did it with the Democrats. They did it with Barack Obama's nominee. And this is just tit for tat. But all in all, I'd rather have smart and hardworking than somebody who, you know, doesn't have the experience and doesn't have the brain power.
We will talk to Karen Conti again as time allows and when she's willing to get on our schedule. Meanwhile, you can hear her on Sunday nights when?
Sunday nights from 7 to 9.
Thanks for being on.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Karen.
Okay, see you later. I think Karen was about to sequester me.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
Apple's new iPhone should be announced today. And they're doing this Apple keynote thing that was started by Steve Jobs so long ago, where you can jump on and you can watch and you can see how much you're going to spend on the new phone.
Ooh, the black turtleneck.
The Apple X is $1,000, right? $1,000?
Yeah, it was roughly.
How much are you willing to pay for a phone?
Well, it's not just a phone. It's a computer.
It's like $175. It's a friend's.
$1,300, I guess.
Will you pay $1,500 for a phone?
No. $1,500?
Absolutely not.
But Sandberg makes a point here. I mean, you know, I don't use a computer anymore. I don't use a desktop. I don't use a laptop. I just use my phone. And at one point, I paid $3,000 for a computer, but it was 1995.
Yeah. Well, the X is how much?
Because
I bought the X for my wife, so I guess I would pay pretty much that much.
Mm. Okay, and I bet when phones are $500, you never could have imagined you'd pay $1,000.
No way.
So now maybe you'll pay $1,500.
Well, don't need it.
What's the storage capacity? I think that's the big difference between a personal
three
computer.
Folders.
But I mean, you can store pictures and you can store. And obviously, I know that they have the cloud and stuff like that. But I feel like that's the difference between mobile technology and the personal computer.
And phones are easier to lose.
True.
Well, there is
that's on the user. I've never lost a phone in the whole time since my first Motorola.
Never? No, of course you haven't.
See, the thing about the new phones that are coming out today, at least the one model is going to have a 6.5-inch screen. Wow. So the phones are no longer phones. They're actually becoming tablets.
Yeah, because for people that like, because people watch so many things on them now, they want the bigger screen.
Well, I've got a Samsung Note 8. This is as big a phone as I'd ever want. This doesn't fit in some pockets. If you can't put your phone in your pocket, where are you carrying it?
Buy new pants.
Most people just have them in their hands all the time.
Yeah. Bring back the cargo pants.
No, do not bring back those cargos.
So a 6.5-inch screen is nuts. But is that what you're saying? The sneak on this, the leak?
Yeah,
is
it's going to be the leak on this is it's going to be called the iPhone XS or the XS. It's going to have a 6.5-inch model. That would be the iPhone XS Max is what that one's going to be called. There's going to be a smaller one called the iPhone XR that's going to be a little bit more cheaper and smaller.
All right, so 6.5 inches is measured diagonally like a TV screen, right?
I believe you're correct on that, yes.
Okay, and I'm just using the standard knuckle method, knuckled to the tip of finger method to measure mine. It looks like a Note 8's about 4.5 inches. I can't imagine 2 inches bigger than this.
When you got that, your current phone?
I thought it was ridiculously big, but I wanted it.
But now you're adjusted to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, sometimes what you think you can't handle,
I feel like
very
comfortable. Feel like I had like a 10-inch, maybe 11-inch TV in my bedroom when I was in college. Like,
oh, I'm sure you did.
Where we're at right now, where
I'm sure you did. Night I moved to Chicago, I bought my house in Chicago, the first house here. I bought a 9-inch black and white TV to watch the O.J. Simpson slow speed chase because none of the furniture had arrived. So
the big back to it, big plastic.
Oh yeah,
back.
And it weighed about 75 pounds.
See, I'm going there. I'm just going to get one of those and carrying them around with me and say, "That's new technology. Take a look."
Now, Justin, you said that the storage of the computer is the selling point versus the phone. Yeah. But do you carry your computer around?
No,
I
think that that's the one thing about mobile technology that I still think that there's a cost. I understand that there's so much more practical use for your mobile device, but I do understand that a personal computer gives you so many more options for storing your stuff.
It's easier to work on. We don't have a job where you need to be banging the keyboard all day long the way a lot of people do, or you know, spreadsheets.
I would argue that I bang the computer quite a bit.
Spreadsheets and things of that. But you live on your laptop, too.
I do.
Yeah. But I'm already out because, you know, if you go and get a laptop, like I had to buy a Chromebook for Miles for this year's sixth grade. I was like, "You're going to make me buy a computer?" But you go to Target and those things are $180 or $200. So my argument's already moot. They've already made the transition that the mobile technology way more expensive than personal computer.
And here's what I want more than a screen or more than storage. I want a battery that lasts longer than lunchtime.
Yeah, right.
I mean, Mike, I have an iPhone 7, and the battery's dead by lunchtime.
Man, you iPhone people, I'll tell you, come over to the Android side of life. Your battery's going to be fine.
That's because you have that 10-pound charging case.
630 said
that battery. One charge of my battery, I can get a full day out of it.
The iPhone X is 256G, which is huge. So there is a lot more storage capabilities on the iPhone X. That's what was answering my own question.
I remember the first computer I bought was 560 megabytes of storage. It's like a paragraph.
Was it one of those? I had one of those blue, the Apple, the blue. They came in blue and orange.
I don't
remember
what it was. It wasn't Apple.
I had one of those in college.
A Dell or something. But 560 megabytes of storage. I mean, that's nothing.
Nothing.
You had a computer in college?
That's a quarter
Me?
Of a photo.
I did,
these
yeah.
Days,
yeah. We had the,
Dave and I had stone tablets.
Yeah, this was ours was the blue and orange. They were like a little, you know, kind of like a laptop. I don't know what they were called, though.
Yeah.
Mary, do you remember in college when you used paper and pen?
I was just thinking, how did I take notes? Oh, yeah. You know, my little binder and trapper or whatever the heck I had.
I remember every 6 months they'd release a new legal pad. They'd have a big press conference.
I actually remember going to a computer lab in college where they had, you know, just the reams and reams of perforated paper feeding into this thing. Mm-hmm. They had no idea what anything meant.
In my dorm, we had the chat room there was a party line that everybody on the floor shared one phone line.
Mm.
So you'd get on it and people would be talking.
I had a word processor.
Did you talk to Thelma Lou on that line?
No, you just pick it up and people would be having all kinds of conversations. Right, right. And that was our chat room.
Listen, it's happening today. And if you want to watch it, you probably need to get outside instead. But you can. It's noon Chicago time. And Apple is streaming it live through a bunch of Apple platforms. And you can find those just by Googling it up. Coming up, Stories of Matter with Steve Grzanich from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Well, it's been a while. Bill O'Reilly at BillO'Reilly.com. You can follow his podcast there. And he joins us now with a new book coming out in October. Good morning, Mr. O'Reilly.
Steve, how you doing? Thanks for having me in.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. Let's talk about your book for a second before we get to the other stuff. Killing the SS. How many is this now? How many killing books?
This is the eighth one, 12 million sold. Killing the SS, the hunt for the worst war criminals in history. Different from the other seven in the sense that we break a lot of news here. A lot of things that people didn't know that happened after World War II ended, and these heinous concentration camp people tried to escape, and many of them did. And you'll be surprised at who helped them. So this is more of an investigative book than a history book.
And how big a team do you have that helps you do all the research on this?
Martin Dugard, my co-author, and I pretty much do it all. It takes a year to write these books. But we're the heavy lifters, Steve.
So you got Himmler, you got Mengele, you got Barbie, you got Eichmann, you got a new movie, obviously, Operation Finale, about the search for Eichmann. Yeah, I don't want to give the book away, but give me one of the surprises that surprised you.
We were able, because I wrote a book called Killing Jesus, and we established a very strong relationship with the Israeli government and Mossad, their intelligence arm. So for this book, we were able to get classified information from the Israelis about the hunt for Eichmann and the hunt for Mengele, the angel of death, in Auschwitz, and what actually happened and how these guys eluded capture for so many years. Stuff's never been seen before. So that's really the headline of the book.
Okay. Book's out in October, and I believe you can pre-order it wherever you buy books now. If not, you'll be able to do that in a few days. We keep hearing about...
Yeah, you can pre-order on BillO'Reilly.com, Amazon, okay. All the others.
All right. We keep hearing about how Sean Hannity and Lou Dobbs are on speed dial with the president. Does he ask you for advice?
You know, I talk to him once in a while. As you may know, I've known him for 30 years. Not a lot, but I talk to a lot of politicians.
But
I mean, a lot of them call me.
Yeah, but this is different. This is the president. I mean, does he ask you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's different. But I never say, you know, what the conversations entail. But he asked my opinion on things, yes.
Well, you know, from the Super Bowl interview a couple of years ago, which made all the news about, you know, when the president said, yeah, Bill, we, you know, a lot of people are killers. You know, you've written a lot about where the president's fallen short or you've disagreed with him. What is he doing wrong?
I think it's messaging. The problem with Donald Trump is that he has no history of discipline when he speaks. All right, that's a very important thing I just told you. So he's a rich guy. He's always been a rich guy, brought up in a wealthy family in New York City. People like that say what they want.
Right.
I mean, they never temper what they say because they're rich guys. Then they walk around and they spout. He's also emotional and reacts emotionally. So he brought that into the White House where every word, every tweet means something and is analyzed. And a lot of times he'll say something doesn't come out right. He didn't mean exactly what the press interprets it as, that kind of thing. So his main deficit right now is the messaging, and that's why he's become such a polarizing figure.
Bill, there's a lot been made about the president on social media, on Twitter, and what he does, apparently, after watching cable news shows like Fox and Friends. You know, for you, you've spent most of your entire career in cable news, and you know how much of it can be serious news, but you also know how much of it is entertainment. Is it wrong for the president to sort of set policy or have his opinion echo what we are watching on cable news?
I don't know if the word wrong is the description I would use. Cable news in America is now divided into two sections. Hate Trump, love Trump. That's where the money is.
Mm-hmm.
All right? When I worked at Fox for more than 20 years, we didn't have any of that. Roger Ailes, my boss, didn't even like Trump. Didn't think he was disciplined enough to run the country. But now, the money is made in the precincts of hate him, love him. He, the president, wants his opinions reinforced. That's what he wants. So he listens to the programs that do that and then will tweet out. I don't see that as a plus for the country, but I don't think it's damaging. It's more trivial to me.
Yeah, but it's trivial because you know him. For people who worship him and don't know his pluses and minuses, that's where it can head down a dangerous road if you believe everything he's sending out.
Well, it depends what it is. You know, Americans have to decide whether a flawed individual who is not practicing politics the way it's been practiced before in the past is worth it. So the plus side is the economy is doing great, and most Americans are benefiting from that. The ISIS killers are on the run everywhere. The trade deals will probably go our way because we have so much power in the United States. Those are the pluses. So you have to weigh that against the minuses. And, you know, I've never seen a politician, and you guys know I write books about Abraham Lincoln and John F. Kennedy. I've never seen a politician polarize the way Donald Trump does.
If he had or would live in the arena of, yeah, we've had a lot of successes, and this is why he's his own worst enemy, he would be much more popular and much better off and probably take less antacids. But having said that, the fake news thing, when he screams fake news every time there's a negative story about him, he reinforces an attitude in this country that nobody doing the news can be trusted. Some of the people doing the news shouldn't be trusted. But when you say nobody can be trusted doing the news, you're doing damage.
Well, I mean, he has his favorite people. I don't know if he's doing damage. He's winning that war, number one.
That doesn't mean he's not hurting people.
Most Americans... What?
That doesn't mean he's not hurting people. That doesn't mean he's not hurting the ability to cover politicians.
Let's step back, all right? Number one, he's winning the war. Most Americans do not believe they're getting honest news. Number two, he has been treated by the press worse than any president in history, with the exception of Abraham Lincoln. Number three, and I know this to be true, the American national media has no interest in finding the truth. They want him out. They want to destroy him. That is the agenda that's imposed. That's the culture in most of the newsrooms. And so, yes, is he trivializing the issue by saying fake news, fake news, fake news? Yeah, he is. But to him, he's winning that fight. And to him, the press is corrupt and has not given him a fair chance.
Big story in media circles this week, Bill, of course, has to do with Les Moonves at CBS. A question, you know, it keeps coming up with what's happening with the Me Too movement and issues of sexual misconduct allegations. Is less about the powerful person and more about the culture of protecting powerful people. For you, do you think that the culture has to change?
I'm not a person who does a general analysis of a situation like this, because I believe that each case is different. But you don't get that, and this goes back to how the news is reported. Each case is different. Some of them are valid, and some of them need to be dealt with, and others are bogus. And due process has to come back. All right? Just because you have an allegation in the Chicago Tribune doesn't make it true. And I'll tell you that the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Chicago Trib, they're not looking for what happened. I mean, they're not investigating. They'll take the allegation, slap it on page one, and all of a sudden, Moonves or whoever it is through. So, in a sane society, you say, in the workplace, people need protections, right?
Well, yeah,
every American would say that. I'm in a union. I want protections. Everybody should have them, all right? But not all accusations are true, and there's an industry that actually advertises on the radio. Hey, if you've been abused or anything like that, you call me.
Right, I get
that. I'm a lawyer, and I'll go in and get you money.
But here's the thing: not all of them are untrue, Bill. They're, you know, if you grant that, not all of them are true.
We live in a country where you're innocent until proven guilty. If we lived in France and the Napoleonic Code, where you're guilty until proven innocent, that statement would have more validity. But here, due process is flying right out the window, is it not?
In some cases.
Okay. But again, if it has to be beyond a reasonable doubt. And in a lot of these cases, that's true. It is, the evidence is the evidence. There it is. But in many of them, Moonves says he didn't do this stuff. Okay, that's what he says. He didn't do it. I don't know. I know Moonves a little, but I don't know him enough to comment on him. I don't know what happened. But he's convicted. He's done.
Well, that's also human nature, Mr. O'Reilly. Can you at least agree, though, that there needs to be a shift in the power balance in corporate culture? I mean, naturally speaking, a room full of men act different than a room full of men and women versus a room full of women. You know, like having some more balance there might help change what's been accused in all these cases.
I have never liked working for corporations, and I am overjoyed to run my own show now on BillO'Reilly.com, and I don't answer to any of the masters. I have never liked the Old Boys Network. I know it exists. I have never liked it because it isn't fair. There is no due process within corporations. It's all, I like you, I don't like you. You might be the most talented person on earth. You're out the door if you look at me cross-eyed. I don't like it. So anything that would improve that culture, that would bring in more people who are fair-minded, I support.
But do you understand why people are so angry in this, and to label it the Me Too era? Because there has been this imbalance, you know, going back as long as you and I have been alive.
I do understand that people who have gotten a bad deal in corporate America are angry. All right? And it's personal. That's obvious. But I also understand that if we continue down this road of everybody's guilty, that there isn't a man in the country with assets or power who's safe. That if you dismiss someone, fire someone, don't get along with someone, they can turn around and destroy you and your family in a heartbeat. You think that's good?
Well,
I don't think so.
No, of course it's not good. But there's a difference, and I'll let you go on this, but there's a difference between criminal courts and the court of culture and the court of the real people. Now, I'm not saying it's fair, but what the internet does is way different than what happens in a criminal court, and I don't know how you put that genie back in the bottle.
I don't either. But I will tell you this, in a civil court, it's the preponderance of evidence, where in a criminal court, it's beyond a reasonable doubt. In both cases, the key is evidence, not he said, she said. But again, corporations have been so bad for so long that you're not going to get sympathy for them. I mean, I've worked 45 years in the corporate world. I know what it is. I've seen it. I got hosed many times. And so that you're not going to, you know, people are going to go, oh, yeah, it's been that way forever, so we need a change. Okay, but let's make sure the change is based on fairness. That's all I say.
Right, and next time we'll talk about fairness when it comes to fake news and all that stuff, too. But I appreciate you coming on. And Wendell, what is the book called again?
Killing the SS, The Hunt for the Worst War Criminals in History. It's about evil, and I think you guys are going to enjoy it.
And if people
once you start reading it, you're not going to be able to stop, just like the other killing books.
And if people want to know where you are at all times, just go to BillO'Reilly.com.
Yeah, BOR.com. We have a very good time there. We're honest. And if people check it out, I think they'll be pleased. I hope so, anyway. And I really appreciate you guys having me in. WGN's legend, and I really appreciate being on your air.
I appreciate you coming on. Thank you. Bill O'Reilly, and again, that's BillO'Reilly.com.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
It is 7:31, and regardless of how late we were, I wanted to make sure that we get to this. The most valuable person on the planet today is Holly Baker. Good morning, Holly.
Oh, good morning, guys. Oh, thank you. That's an amazing thing, really.
Well, no, you're amazing. The Red Cross, of course, is going to be in the middle of whatever Hurricane Florence ends up doing, as the Red Cross always is. And Holly is traveling to the coastal Carolina area to try to do what she can as well. How many volunteers are going?
You know, from our local area, I think we're up to about 17 local people, either already there or on their way.
You ever dealt with a Cat 4 hurricane?
Yep. Last year, we were dealing with a lot with both Hurricane Harvey and Irma and Maria. So this will be something that we're going to be prepared for. But also, every disaster is different. So, you know, it's going to be, we're going to have to see what comes out our way.
Holly, when you're going early, when you're going before the storm hits, what's the duty? What are you doing to get prepared for this hurricane?
Yeah, so that's one of the things that we do. We are always in prepare mode. So what we are going to do is be pre-positioning supplies, identifying places that can be opened as shelters. We're going to plan as much as we can to prepare for the worst, really, and that's what we do. We help people prepare for, respond to, and recover from disasters, both big and small.
Listen, it's okay for us to be worried about you as well. So the Red Cross folks who wade into this, do a good job of taking care of everybody else. But what do they do to keep you guys safe?
Well, the Red Cross would never send us into harm's way. Safety is definitely one of our top priorities for both our staff volunteers and also the people that we serve.
It's a wonderful thing you're doing, and it's highly appreciated by all of us. And on behalf of your parents, your grandparents, your loved ones, good God, wear heavy boots. And just be safe. Be safe. I hope we can talk to you while you're there.
Yes, definitely. And I appreciate the title here, but really the real MVPs are all of our volunteers who choose to up and leave their families and disrupt their lives to go and help the other people who are going to be going through this disaster.
And you don't have to wait for the aftermath to help. Redcross.org, I assume, is a great place to go if you want to help right now.
That's a great place to go. You can always help us out with a financial donation. That's how we do the work that we do, is through the generosity of donations. You can also donate blood if that's something that you'd like to do. You can find a blood drive near you, and you can also volunteer your time. Maybe you'd like to come on board as a volunteer with the Red Cross.
Holly, thank you, we will talk to you hopefully in the next few days, but certainly take care of yourself in the middle of everybody else.
I will, absolutely. Thank you so much.
That's Holly Baker in the Red Cross on the way to help in whatever happens with Hurricane Florence.
That's amazing, yeah.
While we sit in this beautiful studio and look out at a sunrise.
Yeah.
How lucky are we? News next, 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
So this is exactly why I have such issues with the guy currently in the White House. We found out a week ago that 3,000 people died in Puerto Rico, where originally thought it was 64, 65. Puerto Rican citizens are citizens of the United States. The mayor of San Juan, who has been a frequent critic of Donald Trump, was rightfully upset about the way that was treated and the way her people have been treated. The governor as well, but maybe a little more quietly. So here we sit this morning with Hurricane Florence bearing down on the East Coast, another natural disaster, which may or may not be as bad as Hurricane Maria. And because Donald Trump's government was criticized for not helping the people of Puerto Rico on a level that would have made a change in that, because not all of those 3,000 people, more than 9/11, by the way, not all of those 3,000 people died in the initial hurricane. Many died afterwards when they weren't given the help they needed, including water and power. So President Trump this morning, as Hurricane Florence is bearing down on the East Coast, and again, if you're a huge supporter of the president, okay, but explain this. This is a tweet. We got A pluses for our recent hurricane work in Texas and Florida and did an unappreciated great job in Puerto Rico, even though an inaccessible island with very poor electricity and a totally incompetent mayor of San Juan.
He politicizes. Here he goes again.
We're ready for the big one that's coming. Well, he not only politicizes, he treats. I'm not even sure he understands that Puerto Rico is a territory of the United States. I don't even think he understands now that these are citizens of the United States.
And I think Americans understand that this is a remote area and it's difficult to get some of the issues.
But it's not inaccessible.
But my point is the politicizing after the fact that how great all the criticism seems to be around this cult of personality once again. This idea that the president and how he speaks about it is what is critical. Because I would even think the American people are like, that must have been a very difficult thing to deal with, an island that was as remote as Puerto Rico and some of the inaccessible. Where we had the Army kid from Chicago who talked a little bit about it. But my point being that I think we all can empathize with people who are going down there.
Well,
to
it is
help.
Tough, but it's a job.
But it's, right. But the way that the president acts is if there's no way, no. Best unsung. We're the best.
We're,
it's just, it's ridiculous.
It's not we're the best. He's the best. We did an unappreciated great job with me as president. Here's the rest of this. When George Bush got tattooed for how he handled Hurricane Katrina based on one phrase, you're doing a great job, Brownie, it was an unfair amount of criticism that he took at the time. He got, it's living forever. He's been the president that couldn't handle New Orleans. The government did a terrible job that time around. All of that doesn't fall in George Bush's steps, except for the fact that he was a president of the United States. Did you ever hear George Bush complain, wow, that whole Katrina thing was unfair to me?
Or no. fight in the public sphere about
no,
how it
absolutely
is?
Absolutely not. He may be upset about it behind closed doors, but he has never made it a public issue.
And that was about the actual FEMA response.
Right.
The president bungled, the U.S. government bungled the response through FEMA. There's, even to an extent with Puerto Rico, it's not even about that because I think, like I said, I think the Americans understand how difficult that situation is. But the president just won't allow us to recognize that or even mourn that 3,000 people died.
He doesn't get the basic fact that the office is not about him. The office is about the people. And the presidency of the United States is not about Donald Trump and his successes or failures. It's about the people that he represents. You're only there for a limited time, hopefully a lot more limited than it's already been. It's outrageous. It's another outrageous, aggravating tweet as people are trying to scream their way out of the East Coast along Carolina, South and North, and Virginia this morning.
My concern politically,
insensitive D-bag tweet.
Beyond the president, Congress as well. At one point, do they have to start thinking about, when it comes to the budget and it comes to what the government spends money on, reallocating or bolstering the money that will be provided for natural disasters as climate change and you see the force, as Tom Skilling talked, these hurricanes coming with more force. I don't want to be in a position where our tax dollars are not helping in those cases because we ran out.
You got to vote.
Yeah.
Got to vote. Put it on one of your issues, your list of issues that I want to have dealt with, and pick a candidate who sees it your way.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Don't you think that it's boring how people talk? Making smart.
It's 7:53, and the Laver Cup is coming to town, LAVERCUP, lavercup.com, and Kevin Anderson is about to join us. Kevin's very tall.
He is. He's 6'8".
But you think this is good, huh, for tennis?
Well, yeah, I do. It's really good for him for tennis.
Because you get that big wide angle, that big arc.
The arm, the, what do you call that?
Your wingspan.
Mm. Yeah, there. He and, you know, he had that longest match at Wimbledon with John Isner, and John Isner's
lasted six weeks.
But the wingspan of their arms, I think, is, you know, baseline to baseline, both of them. So
Kevin is a professional tennis player from South Africa, ranked number 5 in the world. His wife Kelsey grew up in Glenview, and both went to U of I. Kelsey, by the way, great golfer at U of I. Well, Kevin played tennis, and Kevin wants to talk about the Laver Cup. And Sandberg, you're the tennis nut. Take it away.
Laver Cup, if you go to their website, they have a countdown going on right now. 9 days, 1 hour, 5 minutes, 8 seconds, 7 seconds, 6 seconds. You getting excited, Kevin?
Yeah, it's going to be a great event. I think it's fantastic that we have a tournament like this coming to Chicago.
Now, when you were at U of I, did you come up to the city much?
Yeah, I spent a lot of time in the city. As you mentioned earlier, my wife's family lives in Grandview. And after I just turned pro, and when my wife was working in the city, we actually lived with her parents for a couple years. So I'm very familiar with Chicago. It's one of my favorite cities. And honestly, I'm really excited to spend some time there as well.
Is it surprise you that we don't have a regular tour stop? I mean, every single year and haven't had for a period of time?
Yeah, I've thought that for a while. Obviously, just the size of Chicago, how many people just love sports. It's been a little surprising to me. Tennis in the States, there's been a few cities that have lost tournaments. So hopefully, in the future, we'll be able to get some of those tournaments back, and especially bring one to Chicago. That's why I'm really excited. An event of this magnitude with the kind of players you're going to be seeing is coming to Chicago, and I think there's a lot of people really excited and really looking forward to it.
Who's coming in?
Yeah, so, you know, for myself, I'm, you know, representing Team World, so it's myself, one Joaquin Del Potro, and you've got John Isner, Diego Schwartzman, Nick Kyrgios, and Jack Sock. And then for the Team World, you've got, obviously, some superstars. You've got Roger Federer, Novak Djokovic, Alex Zverev, Dominic Thiem, Gregor Dimitrov, you know, and there's, you've got the coaches, John McEnroe, Bjorn Borg, so it's really a star. There's a lot of, you know, big, well-known names there, and it's going to be some fantastic tennis.
Well, I'm confused, Dave. Do we root for Kev, or do we root for against Kev?
No, I think we root for Kevin because he's on the show.
Okay. He's friend of the show. We're ready for Kevin.
And Kevin, well, is there a lot of camaraderie among you guys? Because, yeah, you play doubles, and but there's an individuality to tennis that you don't have in every sport. And you're a teammate now with John Isner, and you guys had that tremendous match in Wimbledon just a couple of weeks ago.
Just wrapped up 15 minutes ago. Yeah. That's how long they played.
Yeah, you know, I think that's where a lot of players are really excited for this. It started a year ago. I wasn't part of that event. The guys I spoke to really loved it. And, you know, tennis is such an individual sport. We have, you know, some team competitions, but this is, you know, I feel like a pretty unique setup where you have six players from, you know, in my case, around the world playing six players from Europe. And it's a team event. It's not an individual event. So I think it's fantastic for the sport, and also just from the players, it definitely gives it a bit of a different perspective. You know, as you know, I played that really long match against John, you know, off the court, we get on really well. We've known each other all the way back since college days, so it's going to be good playing with him and not against him, you know, that week.
I think you probably know the biggest tennis news in the last week was Serena Williams at the U.S. Open. I'm not sure if you had a chance to read Martina Navratilova's op-ed in the New York Times, but the one thing she said that Serena got wrong is that we shouldn't use the measuring stick of what transgressions you can get away with, rather adjust what, you know, you can get away with as far as on the men's side. Serena shouldn't be lowering her expectations just because guys can get away with it. We should look at tennis as a whole and, you know, bring that up a level. Do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah, that's funny. I was literally just reading on halfway through that article when I thought it was time to call in. So,
sorry, we interrupted.
I'm not going to finish that. But, you know, I think, you know, from the part that I saw, you know, I just know from a personal standpoint, you know, obviously when you're out there, you know, there's so much at stake. There's so many different emotions you're dealing with. And, you know, whether it's a woman, my sort of hope is that you always sort of try to conduct yourself in the best possible way. It's not always easy to do that out there. You know, sometimes does, you know, things, you know, you sort of maybe make decisions that you don't really want to make, sort of in that moment. I think mistakes made all the way around there. I think, you know, from different parties, you know, for me, the biggest thing is just to really give, you know, Naomi Osaka the credit she was due. It was her first Grand Slam. She had a fantastic tournament. I thought she was a better player on the day, and you know, it's really exciting to see the birth of hopefully a new star on the women's tour.
Absolutely. One last thing, Kevin. I know you're a great star, but your wife is the real star of your family. I know she gave up her career as an accountant to be with you full time and manage you on the tour. She also has her own blog, Real Life Tennis. It's her personal blog about experience on the ATP tour and things like that. And she also brings your dogs with you guys everywhere.
Yep. Yeah. So, you know, my wife has been traveling with me for 5-6 years now, and it's obviously just from a personal standpoint, having, you know, somebody who I'm the closest to, you know, travel with me, and we can experience all the things we do. And also, she knows me better than anybody, so, you know, she's been an invaluable force for me from a, you know, professional standpoint as well. And about a year and a half ago, we adopted our dog, Lady Katie, who travels with us almost everywhere. So she'll be up in Chicago too. Looking forward to seeing her grandparents up there, but it's you know, it's nice. We spend so much time on the road, so having that sort of stability and that sort of feeling of you know, obviously having my wife there and a dog simulating some sort of home life, I think, is definitely important too.
Is it true that you adopted the dog to be an automatic ball return when you had no one else to hit to?
Yeah, exactly. I also needed some help with getting balls. There was just too many balls on the court.
That's what I'm talking about.
Very well trained, and yeah, exactly.
All the best. Look forward to seeing you when you're in town, and thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it, guys. Thank you so much.
It's LaborCup.com, and I think we can all agree that guy's a jerk, huh? Whoa, man! What a good guy. Plus, what an adorable accent. Yeah, you just fell for that completely.
You're smitten with Kevin Anderson.
I really am. It's incredible. No, listen, he sounds like a great guy. Yeah. I hope he wins. Do I hope he wins, Dave? Which team am I rooting for?
I think you're rooting for Team World against Team Europe.
Yeah. Okay.
World. Although there's
world.
No Team
world.
USA.
World.
See, with Team USA is part of Team World.
Wait till Trump hears about this. Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Guzanich from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world,
some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey. You know I love you more than what I should. Yeah, honey.
Sponsored by Brand New Smile Dental Implant Center, Dean Richards, live at Channel 9. Good morning.
I had a very nice compliment yesterday. I was seeing a couple of movies, but at one of the screenings yesterday, I'm sitting there waiting for the movies to start. And, you know, other people are coming into the theater, and mm-hmm. somebody comes up to me and goes, "Hi, moron."
That's sweet.
Yeah.
That's sweet. Because this is Moron Entertainment.
And they were like, I don't know, you're on the radio?
would be unfortunate if they weren't talking about
this
segment.
I don't know about the segment.
Yeah, that's wrong. Right. You know, we just lost Burt Reynolds, and now Sally Field's memoir is coming out. I assume she'll write a lot about him, or she has written a lot about him.
Well, she has, yeah. The book's going to come out next Tuesday, and she talks about Burt Reynolds. She talks about how she was sexually abused by her stepfather up until the age of 14. Being sexually harassed in Hollywood, pressured by a film director who wanted to be, you know, kissed before an audition for a movie, which is super creepy.
Yeah, that's not the way the process should work.
It's so creepy. It's like, hey, you want an audition? Kiss me.
So lame.
It's so creepy. The Burt Reynolds part is, I think, very interesting and really also kind of sad because I presume this book was going to come out whether or not Burt Reynolds had died last week.
Yeah.
She says she's glad that he will never read this memoir because it would hurt him.
Wow.
Because she talks about their relationship and says that she had mixed feelings about their time together, that she'll always love him, but still has mixed feelings about their time together.
See, that's the thing. And celebrities get slammed about this all the time. And frankly, it's not fair. Because if a celebrity writes a book and doesn't tell everything, they get slammed for holding stuff back. But if they write the book and they tell everything, they get slammed for telling everything. I mean, you know.
Yeah, but they're writing the book to make money, so.
Well, but still.
Boo-hoo.
No, it's not Tiny Violin's time. I just think, you know, that she's telling the whole story, and I'm glad he's gone, too, because he said she was the one that got away.
Yeah. He said last March in an interview, he called her the love of his life. And, you know, she says she has mixed feelings about it. So that's sad.
Do you have a title for your memoir? Because I have one for mine.
What's yours?
How I Scratched and Clawed My Way to the Middle and Stayed There. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Nobody's got that one done yet.
Yeah.
I'm working on a couple of working titles, but just based on what we've said this morning, I'm thinking imagine this in big letters on the cover of the book, moron, ..
That's not bad.
And then each chapter is moron.
Yeah, you got a Gibson, theme thing going.
Moron, what it was like working.
I like Hey Bozo for you. Hey Bozo.
I don't think I can get the rights to the name.
All right, why is Norm MacDonald making so much news?
Norm MacDonald was supposed to be on The Tonight Show last night. He's got a new Netflix special or something coming out.
Yeah, he's supposed to be on The Tonight Show.
And And he was supposed to scheduled to be on the show.
Scheduled to be on the show.
Earlier in the day, though, he did an interview with Hollywood Reporter.
Talking about stuff.
Yeah, sitting down with Hollywood Reporter.
Sit down
with
an interview. Sit down with an interview.
Came to the defense of Louis C.K. and Roseanne in the interview.
Yeah, that wasn't very smart of me.
Said he's glad the Me Too movement has slowed down felt sorry for Louis C.K. and Roseanne because very few people have gone through what they have gone through, that something happens and suddenly your entire life's work is wiped out in a single day, in a single moment, something that didn't happen to the victims.
Looks like we should give him O'Reilly's number.
Yeah. He also criticized the lack of forgiveness for performers who work all their lives and, you know, make mistakes. And we've actually talked about that as well. You know, do you ever forgive people who have made a mistake? So anyway, the Tonight Show canceled him. It said out of sensitivity for their audience. And then Norm Macdonald goes on Twitter last night and apologized, saying that Roseanne and Louis have both been good friends of mine for many years. They both made terrible mistakes. I would never defend their actions. If my words sounded like I was minimizing the pain that their victims feel to this day, I am deeply sorry.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's good. And to show you how Norm's mind really works comedically, that tweet is right above a tweet about Burt Reynolds and Burt Convy.
So I guess I understand the Louis C.K. stuff, but the Roseanne stuff was just about Valerie Jarrett, right? I mean, she's not in trouble for anything else, right?
General.
But I'm just saying, like, it seems like
got a lifetime of things that she's done. Yeah, maybe, but yeah, the most recent was the Valerie Jarrett tweet. Okay.
The anthem was the most offensive. And Cosby Show, Elden got another acting job.
Yeah, this is the actor who was photographed bagging groceries at Trader Joe's, which, by the way, I think is going to be my next job when I get kicked out of here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Trader Joe's guy. Trader Joe's. I'm putting you on notice right now. I've got lots of experience with this. I worked at the good old A&P store throughout high school and college. So I'm pretty handy in the checkout line.
Did you work at the A&P where they had the coffee grinder at the end of the thing? Oh, was that a great smell? I don't even drink coffee, but I love that smell of a coffee being ground fresh.
Yep, right at the cash register. You took the 8 o'clock coffee, poured it into the grinder.
Yep, and they put it right back in the bag for you.
Ground away. No better advertisement for selling
coffee.
Dean,
you work in the register in the old day?
I worked in the register. Yeah. I worked in the produce department. I worked all around. That's what I mean. Hey, Trader Joe's, I could run your store.
No question.
I could be a manager of any of your stores.
Hey, were you squeezing the melons when you were working in produce?
I'm still squeezing the melons.
That's why you're so successful. All right, buddy. More on entertainment.
Elden got a job.
Oh, that's right. We didn't finish
another,
the story.
Got another job on NCIS New Orleans.
More on entertainment.
Take my melons and get out of here.
Sponsored by Brand New Smile Dental Implant Center. Thank you.
See you.
Stand by. Adam Burrish coming up next.
I'm following Bix out there. Are you getting nervous yet?
No, I'm never nervous.
These guys are all too cool. Nobody gets nervous around here. I'm getting a little nervous. All right. Here we go.
Stanley Cup champion in 2010, number 37, Burr, Adam Burrish.
Here come the Hawks, the mighty.
Well, this weekend, Dave Ennett, Training Camp Festival.
How about that?
It's
Saturday.
A festival.
It's a festival.
And Saturday. There'll be rides and games. You'll be able to ride your favorite Canadian.
It's really not that kind of festival, Steve.
Oh, that's wrong?
That's not exactly right. There might be some rides, but not that kind.
Okay. You know what Coach Q and I, on Monday when we played the Hawks tournament, you know what Coach Q and I had a long talk about? The Bears.
Did you?
Yeah. Hmm? Yeah, he's turned into a real football fan. I don't think he was before he was here.
I had a long talk with Edzo about the Bears on Monday.
Everybody's talking about the Bears. Hard to believe after
hours after the game.
David Haw made a good point on Twitter. He said, you know what, win or lose, the most talked about opener in recent Bears memory, so that's got to be a good thing.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Adam Burrish joins us now. We like Adam. Not everybody does. There's just a lot of people that don't like Adam, but we're big fans.
Is that true?
Steve, I'm going to jump in and say I thought you guys brought me in to talk about the Packers. Everybody hates me anyway, so let's talk about the Packers.
Now, the burden for Adam Burrish is everybody loves him. I tell you this every time I see it. You're just doing a great job talking hockey after all those years of playing hockey, and I think you're great on TV, and I hope you keep it up.
Well, thanks. I've got a good partner, Mary, who's on the show there with you, too. Her husband, Pat Boyle, takes good care of me on TV. I think he makes me look pretty good. I wasn't ever a good player, and I think I'm a below-average guy on TV, but I tell people I show up on time and I try hard. So,
well, you're making the most of your limited skills. Yeah. But in all seriousness, his team this year, I mean, again, it sounds like a homer, and I certainly am one of those, but if this Blackhawk team stays healthy, there's no reason this can't be a great year.
You know what? I'm really excited. And a lot of these guys are still good friends of mine, and I played with them. And in talking to them, I spent the day with Brent Seabrook the other day, and seeing how these guys are excited. It doesn't feel like it's their 14th or 15th season, or like they won three Stanley Cups. Everybody's telling them they suck and they're too old, and their time's left them. They missed the playoffs last year. They get eliminated in the first round. These guys are pissed off, and you piss off a guy like Brent Seabrook, you piss off a guy like Duncan Keith and tell him he's lost a step, or Jonathan Toews, what's happened
to
him?
That's right.
They're pissed off, and it talks.
So they're angry is the point you're trying to make. They're upset.
I wanted to go hit somebody or go fight somebody because they had me fired up because they're angry.
And yes, that's right.
You piss off guys that have won three.
Yes, they seem to be quite upset about it.
I think there's a drinking game going on here.
He's trying to see how many times he can get that on WGN before the phone goes dead. Corey Crawford, I talked to Corey on Monday as well, and he said he's feeling good. We didn't talk about whether or not he's going to suit up right away, but I'm telling you, he's feeling good. Look, lots of positives. So this training camp festival on Saturday, what's going to happen?
Well, the scrimmage is awesome. You're going to see, which is, I think it's, as a player, you go through training camp and it sucks. You know, you got practices every day. You never get to play, and here you're at day two in training camp. Everybody's going to be on the ice playing, and everybody's going to be showing off. There's fans there. There's stuff going on outside. There's music playing. I'd like to see you in one of those bouncy tents.
How do you know I'm not going to be there? How do you know I'm not there? You don't know. I'm going
to
do that.
Great. Yeah, it's a fun day, and it's a way to kick off the season. The players love it because you don't have to practice. You don't have to do some stupid practice. You don't want to be out there for. You get to play a game in front of a bunch of fans. So the players, they can't wait to get that started. It's a nice way to kick off the season. It's going to be fun, and I'm going to be there.
So Alex DeBrincat's only 20 years old. Is he angry yet?
No, he's pissed off.
No, I think he's. I
had to start him.
He's expecting more. I think he's expecting more. You see him around. He actually looks in better shape. He looks kind of jacked now. He doesn't look like a little boy's body. He looks great. I think he's got confidence now. You come into the league, you kind of tiptoe around, and now he kind of feels like, hey, I'm an NHL player. I belong here. And now I got to show everybody that I'm the real deal. There's a lot of hype around him, and I think he kind of likes the attention. He likes the pressure. I don't see any of the sophomore slump stuff people are talking about. This guy's the real deal.
Yeah, I agree.
Adam, how did you feel about preseason games when you were a player? I mean, did you look forward to them to get you away from just the humdrum practice?
Yeah, I guess he didn't want to practice, but it's way too many preseason games. I think six of them, that sucks. It's way too many games, I thought. I just wanted to get to the regular season and get going. I think that's every player. Well, you want to start. You want game one. You want opening night. It can't get there fast enough. You want to play in, I'd say most guys want to play two preseason games. I think you want to get in two. You want to get some rhythm. You want to get hit. You want to get sore a little bit.
But two games and you're ready.
Player, I'm ready. Yeah, preseason's too long. You got to practice. You got long practice. You got workout. Testing is really hard. You got to go through all this testing. Preseason games are long, but I also get the young guys that are coming up. When it was my first or second training camp, I want all the preseason games I could get because I want to show off. I got to earn my spot on the team. Sure. So it's for those guys. It's for the guys. It's for the staff to evaluate their players to see who they can call up. You got a fourth line player. You got a sixth, seventh defenseman you want to see. So they're going to have to play all four, five, six games. So it's good for those guys. For the older guys, just get me to game one.
Right.
Are you, Adam, are you far enough away from playing where you don't get that itch when the season's coming up that you wish you were on the ice, or do you still wish you were?
I haven't missed playing for 1 second since I've been done. Not 1 second. I can't get beat up sitting on the phone talking to you guys. I can get beat up when I played hockey every night, but I haven't missed it for a second. I think it's fun to...
Hey, don't cross Pat Boyle. I'm telling you, one bad broadcast with Pat Boyle, he'll cold cock you.
You should see the looks he gives me half the shows when I'm screwing up on TV all the time. He keeps me on edge. I'm nervous around him, but I just let him do his thing, and he makes me look as good as he possibly can. So I'm not nervous, but I don't miss playing. I can tell you that for sure.
Well, it's great having you on TV, and if you come out of your shell, I think you get a bright future. ChicagoBlackhawks.com. Details on Training Camp Festival. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Steve.
And those first 10,000 fans get a DeBrincat bobblehead.
So. Oh, they do?
Yep.
Okay. I couldn't decide. What was the phrase it pays, do you think, during that interview?
I'm going to say.
I said PO'd.
Oh, PO'd? Okay.
Yes.
Wait, hey, Dave.
I like yeah. Sucked.
Was Adam, was he a little naughty?
Was a little right naughty. When he a little
yeah,
naughty?
I'd say there's a little naughtiness.
There you
there.
Go.
Yeah.
Whenever he's my favorite hockey analyst of all time.
Whenever
that was great.
Whenever Dave says naughty, remember you cringe and then be the seventh caller for a big prize. 312-981-7200.
I got it. I'm Pat Stitt. All right, let me hear it.
Now from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
Relax. System checkout signal across the board. What's the frequency?
It's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Thank you, Anna. And we continue with show number 1,218. Wow, that's a lot of shows. You know, I'm pretty sure I'm right about this. I'm coming up on 10,000 shows.
Wow. In your career or here?
Yeah, total.
That's amazing, man.
That's
congratulations.
A lot of shows.
That's great.
Can we verify that?
Well, no, you don't want me to count them all.
Fake news.
Amongst the good things that we are able to do here is talk about organizations we're fond of. So, Good Sports is one of them. And coming up, Pat Boyle, you may have heard of him. Big shot local sportscaster from NBC Sports Chicago is going to MC a big evening. Coach Doug Bruno will be there from the DePaul University women's basketball team to talk about Good Sports. And the boss at Good Sports, Toby Ems, the Chicago market director, is here. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Where's the accent from?
It's from UK, England.
What part?
Cambridge.
That's what I was going to guess.
Yeah. Been here for 24 years, though, so it's faded a little.
But you've kept it just because it's impressive.
I tried to.
Yeah, I get it. Tell people what Good Sports is.
Good Sports, we're a charitable organization here in Chicago that provides brand new sports equipment, apparel, and footwear to organizations and schools in need.
And that's everybody, most part, right? Because having the right sports equipment and sports equipment in general for kids, it's assumed that everybody has it, but they don't.
They don't, no. The rising cost of sports in America is getting out of control. It's become a pay-to-play sports arena, and with budget cuts, especially to schools, there's so many kids being left on the sidelines and unable to play. The cost of sports equipment is the most expensive, and Good Sports is here to provide brand-new, free sports equipment to those schools and organizations.
Samberg?
Justin spoke about this earlier this week. He's frustrated with even like the parks. You can't use a park for a game because it's all for paid activities.
Yeah,
you know,
right,
so
diamonds,
it's everything is involved with the kids. You know, I've been because my husband has emceed this event every year for 6 years or something. I've been at the event, and what you get to see the kids that are
that benefit
from this. And you know, you think of equipment. I know we think of like the bigger sports like football, etc. But the even something as small as there was a team that didn't have running shorts to be in their cross country. You know, like
it's a big deal.
The kid didn't have shorts at home. You know, like. It's hard to imagine that we're talking about kids that have nothing, and then their schools have nothing, and they can't do anything. And school is, the kids, they thrive when they're participating.
Scientifically proven. Study after study after study will tell you, look, academics, vitally important, obviously. We get that. But the physical activity and the bonding that goes on and the lifetime of memories from being involved in team sports is a big deal. You can't do it if you don't have the goods.
You can. I mean, the social and emotional benefits of sport and physical activity are critical to a child's development.
When you talk about providing some of these things to budget-challenged schools and organizations, a lot of times we've heard this story because in inner cities, that's why so many kids gravitate towards basketball, because it's one ball you bring and one hoop that's provided by a park. As you think about other sports, football comes to mind, baseball, are you seeing benefit from what you provide? I mean, are you seeing more of the inner cities, and especially in the Chicago area, gravitating to more complex team sports because of what Good Sports does?
Without doubt. I mean, as you said, a lot of schools and organizations go for basketball because it, in essence, is a lot cheaper sport to provide. What Good Sports does, though, is we provide equipment to all sports. So if a school or an organization is just doing basketball, now they can actually expand and do baseball. They can do soccer. They could even do football, field hockey, lacrosse. So we are here to help schools and organizations just to expand and offer new sports, especially to girls. I mean, you know, girls want to play sports as much as boys, but they're just not given the opportunity. So we're here to help them do that.
How do you raise the money?
We raise the money through corporate giving, individual giving, and foundations, but we also partner with a lot of the big sports manufacturers, such as Adidas, Nike, Under Armour, who provide...
How about Wilson? They're right here in town.
And Wilson, huge partner of ours.
Yeah.
They provide either donated equipment or heavily reduced equipment for us.
Which is great, because you got to get it out to a lot of people in need. How do you know who's in need?
Well, I mean, Chicago in general is in need.
But you're not picking up the phone and calling schools and going, hey, do you need anything, right?
We do.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, we do that as well. But a lot of Chicago public schools, I mean, huge partner of ours, the Park District.
Sure.
Any organization can apply for equipment. They just go to goodsports.org,
fill
out an application. It takes 20 minutes to do. We'll give them a call and get them equipment.
I talked to Justin about the fact that you can't get access to diamonds, and I said you need to bribe an alderman. You're not in that part of the business, are you?
No,
that's not what you do.
No,
that's sorry, that's a different guest.
Yeah, it's a different guest.
Yeah. You know, so Good Sports started in Boston, and then they opened some other locations here in Chicago as one of them. And since they've been here, they've given out over 375,000 Chicago kids the opportunity to experience sports with nearly $3 million worth of equipment. So it's a mass undertaking.
Let's guilt some CEOs headed for work this morning. What have you done for Good Sports? What are you doing to help the next generation of not just athletes, but people?
Do you? But
hold on a second. I'm done with the plug.
I'm sorry.
Good Sports, if you're a CEO and you want to help, they go to the website too?
Go to the website. Give me a call as well. Send me an email.
Right. Step up, corporate big shots.
Does this kind of program, if used and able to be able to cross over to a mainstream, does it change the way that schools and organizations look at their budget? I mean, they're automatically like, okay, we're short on cash, so what's going to go is the football program or the soccer program. And by having this ability to have a relationship with Good Sports, do you think that it's going to change the way our culture right now is looking at the school budget?
Of course it is. I mean, across the nation, on average, a public school budget is less than $1,000 for their athletic department. So the athletic director, he's got to choose between getting buses to get the kids to games or buying new sports equipment. Well, you can't have one without the other. So
you got to fill the gap.
And then the school cuts the athletic program.
Right, so you guys fill the gap.
Exactly. Yes, we do.
Website again.
Goodsports.org.
And I know you got a good MC, so I know you're going to have a good night.
We have a phenomenal MC. He's been doing it a couple of years now, Pat Boyle. We have an incredible evening. It's at the University Club of Chicago, here in Chicago.
Tickets still available?
Oh, yes, yes. Please go to our website. You can buy a ticket or a table or provide sponsorship.
There you go. Well, nice work by you.
It's Thursday, September 20th, and I believe 2 years ago, the Cubs won the World Series 2 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Crane and Kelly Kenny are really involved in Good Sports, and we played one of those games where you put your hand, that's the big thing at charity things now, where you put your hands on your head or your behind,
right,
yeah. And then heads or tails, yeah. And so they rolled in, we're playing the game, next thing you know, Kelly Kenny's on stage, she's the last one standing, so she won the big... The big thing. She was the head or tail. Yeah.
Really?
So she won the big prize. It was fun. A fun thing. I love seeing everyone dressed up doing heads or tails with their hands on their head.
My friend Steve has been in the final three times on that. I'm like, it's not a game of skill. It's a game of choosing. Right. But he's like, he's perfect.
Flip it. Nice to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Keep up the great work.
Thank you.
It's Good Sports.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
You know, one of the great things about being a grandfather in 2018 is you get instant access to the grandkid. In my case, the fabulous Abigail Grace, regardless of what she's doing or where she is. So last night, you guys probably don't know about Instagram. It's quite popular. Last night, Lauren and Ross posted toddler yoga to Instagram, which essentially is Abigail bending over, bouncing on her head, and saying, look, daddy, look. In other words, perfect form.
Yeah.
Was this a still, a boomerang, or a video?
It was a video.
Video. Nice. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Now, was the whole family participating in toddler yoga? Just Abigail?
Just Abigail.
That
was
like a game of Twister.
Yeah.
I like that she's doing yoga, though. She knows the benefits.
The stretching it, too. You don't want to have sore arms and legs and limbs.
Used to be baby gymnastics.
Nope. Baby yoga now. It's hot. Believe me.
Out loud.
858 CLTV joins us next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Sponsors by Grandview Homes. It's our friend Elise Glenn. Good morning, Elise.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
Where are you at?
Where am I doing?
Yeah, well, no, where are you right now? Where are you right now?
Oh, in the world, I am in Las Vegas, actually at the HR Tech Conference and SAP Success Connect, talking about labor and jobs and all kinds of things people are going to do to find people.
Is this a code for your gambling problem that you just haven't been willing to admit?
Oh, you caught me again.
Are you a gambler when you travel at all?
No.
So when you go to Vegas, you never go in the casinos other than to walk through them?
So I try on every, I've been to Las Vegas four times this year, and by the time you get to the fourth trip, you don't even see the casino anymore. All you're looking for is Starbucks.
You know what I do at the casinos, because it's a real time saver? I take $200 out of the ATM and I throw it on the floor, and then I go to my room. Because, you know, it's just, it takes a lot less time than just to take time to lose it.
It does, but you should give it to one of the cocktail waiter or waitresses, because they work really hard.
Point.
Steve, do you think we're going to go to Vegas again this year, you and I?
Yes, absolutely. We are doing a Vegas trip. As a matter of fact, it's been discussed. The Blackhawks.
December, though, isn't it?
In Vegas. I didn't even look at the schedule.
It is December.
Oh, perfect time. Nothing else going on in December.
Beginning of December.
Yeah, we're going to take
it. It's only one time they play this year. So.
This show, live from Vegas, proved to be so helpful to the Blackhawks last time. What was that final day when we were out live in Vegas?
I wasn't with you, so I blocked that out of my memory, but I think it was like 5-0.
5-2, 6-1, 9-3.
It was not good.
But we found a really cool restaurant right next to the arena where a...
we could eat sushi.
Yeah, you could eat sushi. You could also have a hamburger. It was a very interesting fusion restaurant. But very entertaining wannabe actors and actresses, musically talented as well, dancing and singing on the tables and on stage. Cool.
And so our boss, Stephanie, was sent with us to keep us in line, and she may or may not have been dancing with the performers at that restaurant.
May or may not have.
Somebody had to do it.
Now, see, here's the problem. December 6th, I've just been told, is the game. That's my brother's 60th birthday.
Oh, no.
So Mickey's coming with us, is what you're saying.
Mickey in Las Vegas. How fantastic an idea is that?
That's a great way to celebrate.
That's a great theme.
Yeah,
bring listeners along for Mickey.
Good. It's pretty good.
And the Blackhawks love Mickey. So
they like him a lot better than they like me.
Yeah.
All right, so there's a CNBC piece I just read, and I got to ask you about this, Elise. Baby boomers struggling to downsize could create the next housing crisis. The idea being, I sell my house, maybe I make $100,000. Now I got $100,000 to work with, but I can't find a house that I can afford without overspending again, and I'm too old to overspend. Do you see this?
Yes, it actually is a little bit of an issue, especially in some parts of the market. I wouldn't say Chicago is seeing that right now, in fact, but it'll eventually catch up to Chicago. But what we are seeing is that baby boomers have actually, instead of when their kids leave, instead of downsizing, what they do is they are getting even bigger homes. And so when it comes time to sell, it's a little bit crazy.
And this is not the market for that to be a good play for, say, the last 20 years of your life.
No, you don't want it to be, right? Because what you want to do is, having built up a lifetime of equity in your house, you'd like to sell your house, move into something small and cheap that you can afford for the next 40 years, which many of us are going to actually have in retirement.
Mm-hmm.
But baby boomers are struggling under, they got really hit badly 10 years ago in the Great Recession. So now they may have a lot less in their 401ks, if they have 401ks at all, and their homes may not have really bounced back in value, or if they have, they still have a huge mortgage on them. So they're not going into retirement in ideal shape.
Right. This kind of dovetails into the story today in Chicago. It's reported about some of the more luxury housing, older housing stock in some of the suburbs. They specifically talk about the Barrington area. Is really seeing a decrease in home prices. And this is something almost, I think the word nosedive was used in some of the headlines. And really talking about a lot of that market moving to the city, moving to Chicago. What do we make of the idea that, that where we have known to be affluent and luxury housing is having a crisis?
So we talked on the show a lot about this, how Lake Forest has had a problem, Glencoe's had a problem, Winnetka has had a problem, and it doesn't surprise me that Barrington and Barrington Hills may be having problems, although I travel there less frequently. You know, clearly there's been a shift over the last 10 years on millennials who have pushed off buying a home, pushed off how many kids they're actually having, are having much fewer in the way of kids, have changed preferences in where they want to live. So they don't care as much about schools when they have dogs or maybe one kid, as opposed to their parents who might have had two or three or even four kids. Although I did meet somebody yesterday with five, and I looked at her and said, "Oh my gosh, that's unbelievable." But
that's like how the women running Walter E. Smith, the daughters, they have a gaggle of
children. Yeah, amazing women, and they have an average of 4.5 kids or something.
Yeah,
She's a senior VP at a really huge company, and just five kids. And I thought I'm inadequate, but okay, let's get beyond that. But you know, to go back to your question, you know, when people, it's really about supply and demand, right? And what kind of housing people want to live in. And I think what people who live in these suburbs, and I'm one of them, have had to come to the understanding is that great schools are not enough. Right, people, you know, millennials who are in their 30s don't want what I wanted when I moved out to Glencoe 25 years ago, and so they want urban, they want diversification, they want to be close and walking distance to their jobs, they want restaurants that are hip and cool and fun places to meet their friends, and they want to live around friends. And when you live in the suburbs, you trade off some of that. You make wonderful new friendships, and you get wonderful schools for your kids, and you get more space, and you can run around, and there's a beach nearby. But it's different. And so this generation of homebuyers is different, and we all have to wake up to that reality. And so I think the suburbs are seeing the beginning of it.
Do we have any empirical evidence that says, yes, this economy roaring such that it is by the statistics we gauge it on is, in fact, working for the average person?
I'm not exactly aware of anything at my fingertips that I could point to.
You know why?
That says things are great.
Yeah, because there are two economies, right? There's two economies. There's the economy of business and of people who are of a certain income level. And then there's the real people economy. So do we need to change the scorecard so we're not, you know, reporting the Dow and the S&P as the numbers to watch, or even the unemployment rate every month, and find a new statistic to represent regular folks?
Well, I guess the question is, are regular folks reading the news that we're reading in the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times and Chicago Tribune even? Is that where, you know, the economy of people who earn $50,000, $60,000 a year is actually going to get their news? And I don't know the answer to that. So if you're, you know, wealth-to-do and you have a lot of money in the stock market, you're in the 50% that has stocks, you know, reporting in the stock market probably makes you feel pretty good. But there's a lot of other people out there who don't have that.
Yeah, you know how they're always looking for a new gimmick for movie reviews? Like, it's four buckets of popcorn. We need something that people can wrap their arms around, their heads around.
Yeah,
like, what's a family of four dinner out cost tonight? Okay, what's it cost tomorrow night? What's it cost the night after that? You know, at an average mid-priced restaurant. Those type of things would what people connect with because, well, I fully agree that the economy, in quotes, is doing very well. I don't know that it's reached those people we're talking about.
And this is a big concern with the Obama administration as well, where they would tout numbers, and then the criticism was, you're only talking about a certain part of the country. You're not talking about the underreported.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Elise doesn't need the money. Other people do.
Well, it's interesting. So being at this big, huge conference that where everybody here is with HR, it's interesting to start hearing companies talk about changes in their jobs. So I've been talking to some Canadian, this was last night at a dinner I went to. I was talking to some guys who are the heads of HR for big Canadian companies who are in the oil industry, and one of them is about to lay off a huge number of workers as they convert their plant from oil to gas, I think is what he said.
Okay.
And he said it just takes fewer people to run that kind of a company. But we're changing and the market is changing and what we need to produce is changing. And so we're going to be laying off people. And these are companies that have 30, 40, 50,000 full-time workers, and then they also have 55,000 contract workers. So it's interesting how jobs are changing, and you know, in every industry, even in the very best economy, layoffs are coming, and the people who feel it are the people who can't move to the new jobs, don't get the training, can't get the training for whatever reasons, or they're simply are not needed, and that's going to be the issue of the next 50 years for this world.
Speaking of the next 50 years, or even just the next generation, as millennials age into being the ones that are in charge of everything, we have a generation with great generalities here, a generation that isn't as career-driven as previous generations have been and are more driven by the overall thought of helping people. What does that do to the economy?
Well, probably a good thing, because if we can figure out how to keep them fed and sheltered and, you know, engaged, because if you have fewer jobs and you're going through this horse and buggy whip to the Model Ford to, you know, whatever kind of contraption we'll be flying around in, you're just going to need different jobs. So we need people to make sure that everybody else is doing okay. One of the big trends that I've seen at HR Tech and at SAP Success Connect Factors over the last couple of years is this movement towards employee engagement and wellness at work. And it's, you know, this is that part of, this is the sort of the actualization of that trend that you're talking about, which is how we get people to feel better doing jobs they need to do every day, even if it isn't the job they maybe want to do, it's a job they have to do, and how do we keep them engaged and happy so that people don't go, you know, crazy and get all sad and things like that. It's a real question that I think the larger employers are grappling with every single day.
25 or 30-year-old who's really driven to make a lot of money now probably has a better shot because there's less of you that are trying to make a lot of money.
I think it's going to be harder and harder to make a lot of money.
No, so you're saying it's talent-driven and opportunity-driven? What if I click my heels?
I have a pair of ruby slippers for you.
Sponsored by Grandview Homes. It's Elise Glink. If we want to see what you do every day and all the information you provide, or maybe pick up your books, where do we go?
Why don't you stop by thinkglink.com, or if you're more interested on the business side, B2B and work issues, go to bestmoneymoves.com.
Sponsored by Grandview Homes. Stay off the craps tables for 10 minutes today and do some work, will you?
You bet.
Okay, that's Elise Glink.
There you go.
Still to come on the show, Ro Khan. I don't know if you're familiar with Ro's work, but he and Anna DeVellantis do a show here every afternoon at 3 and at 3 to 4 o'clock hour. They're on Serial TV like we are right now. Or if you prefer, CLTV. Steve, what's coming up?
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
I bought you things that I didn't even 9:28 now. Watching the very frightening Hurricane Florence bear down on the East Coast, it is going to take a hard left turn sometime early tomorrow morning into the middle of the day, if not tomorrow night. The speed of the storm fluctuating slightly as well, but when it does turn left, it looks like it's going right into Myrtle Beach, at least as the center of the trouble right now. It doesn't mean that Virginia is out of danger. It doesn't mean that Charleston's out of danger. It just means that a hard left is going to change where the storm comes ashore. One of the most amazing things, I mean, it's the rain, right? It's the rainfall that's coming. It's the storm surge. And if you look at the track of this thing and ride it out, there will be 50 mile an hour or more winds until Monday morning. Are you That's a guy, long time to be in a storm.
You mentioned this, Tom, and I'm sure you were joking, but are you the kind of guy that is super into the weather models? Like, are you always looking at the weather, like what the forecast?
I'm a bit of a weather geek, but and the computer models do seem to work out. But you know, when Tom first got into the business, all he had was a stone tablet.
I know.
A stone tablet and a magnifying glass, and the sun would reflect off the stone, and that's how he would forecast the weather. You probably didn't know that. That was early weather technology.
I don't care about Tom. I love Tom. I'm learning more about Steve Cochran. Like, I want to know more about like what you're doing. Like when
many
you're like,
do.
Looking on your phone and you're like, oh, the weather.
I'm probably at all the different he probably patterns. Has a radar app simply for his golf purposes.
I do have the hourly,
and so it probably has trained him.
It's a true story.
Yeah. Okay, so then it's you know then you've learned it. So now when a storm is hitting,
can you give me pointers? I don't usually follow that.
My love of weather goes back to playing the weatherman and Grumpy Old Men. Ever since then, I have been a well-respected weatherman from coast to coast, who Walter Matthau called a fat ass.
We were talking about your movie career yesterday in our post-show meeting because you weren't there. And what
talking about me behind my back?
What was the Christian Slater movie? We were trying to remember what it was.
Untamed Heart.
Because said you were going to John DeCosta's father's funeral, and then we were speculating if you were going to the burial, and I had suggested that maybe you should go because you have experience from the movies.
Oh, sure, being at a funeral.
You were at a funeral in that movie, and you all watched it. So
I hate to ruin it for you, but it's a 25-year-old movie. Christian Slater dies.
Oh, spoiler alert.
Yeah. So, but our best wishes to anybody you know, and obviously everybody we don't know who's living under the gun in that part of the world, because this storm is not getting to a position where you're going, oh, there's the bright turn we were hoping for. Now it's going out to sea. It's going to be a lot of rain, a lot of water, and a lot of trouble. Yeah. I thought the president summed it up best yesterday. I'm just going to read the quote before we go to break. This is President Trump. They haven't seen anything like what's coming at us in 25 or 30 years, maybe ever. It's tremendously big and tremendously wet. Direct quote from Donald Trump. It's 9:31. He's not wrong.
He's not wrong.
It's 9:31. News next, 720 WGN.
Science says that bald is powerful. This is actually a University of Pennsylvania study. Found that bald men are perceived to be more powerful than fully haired men.
Really?
Yeah.
It all depends how they rock it.
Yeah, I think a good head of hair or a bald head, if you commit completely to both.
To the bald.
Yeah. And it's not like the first day they committed and it's like completely white on top. Like they've got it's been exposed to some sun. Like this guy's a veteran in the bald game.
Yeah. So guys are like shining it and tanning it and doing all that sort of stuff. Shiny bald headed
people. I could not be more offended. Pro cons here. What do you and your hairy show know about being bald?
Nothing.
You're talking about bald like you people are bald experts. Who's got a bad head of hair on your show? Nobody.
I just want to say one thing, and maybe this is too much information. There is not a single inch of my body that is bald. It is.
I'm telling you right now, I listened last night after I finished weeping. I considered calling your show and saying, what in the hell is going on with this bald talk?
You
could have left it with
bald people were more powerful.
Oh, but that's not where it ended.
It's a compliment.
That's not where it ended. It ended with Violetta chiming in.
Well, that we can't help.
She should have been dealing with complaints from the gay organizations across town.
She did say she did have a strange moment last night when we were talking about this. It was same conversation that. There's a study out that says that you can tell 9 major things from people in the first second that you meet them, within a second of meeting them.
Okay.
And according to this one study, it said that that you can tell if a man is gay or straight within 1 second.
Wow. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, that is clearly inaccurate.
I mean, clearly I have to wait to find out if he's a good kisser. I mean, that's ridiculous.
So she said that she was snookered by that once by a guy lighting candles on a date. And I'm like, well, why were we on a date with a guy that was lighting candles? She was in his home and he was lighting candles at home. And she thought, well, this isn't going to go anywhere because, you know, he's lighting candles. And I immediately called GLAAD and...
said, you would not believe what this woman is saying on my show.
I said the gay community, the LGBT LGBTQIFG community has now been besmirched by, I suppose, the beeswax industry.
Right.
I don't know what that's about.
Right. I think we all know, to be completely fair, scented candles make you gay. Regular old candles don't. I mean, come on. Let's not generalize. Let's not stereotype.
I just want to, you know, you pull out like one of those Wix candles from the bathroom.
Right.
Hey, how you doing? That just tells you you're not gay.
Come
on. I'm going to light this candle right now. It smells real nice.
I remember the first time I met you and you had those floating things in the bathtub in warm water. I said, he's not gay.
I thought it was real weird that the first time we met was in my bathroom, but that's a separate issue.
Hey, Ro, how are you?
I couldn't be better, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I don't know if you know this, but Hurricane Florence is bearing down on the Carolina coast. And the president of these United States, at least today, wanted us to know that it's very wet. It's very wet.
Tremendously wet.
The storm is tremendously big and tremendously wet.
Tremendously wet. Okay. Thank God there's other people. I saw the FEMA director in a press conference earlier today who was trying to explain to people. All right, now let me explain something here. This is your last chance to get out. If you don't, just write your Social Security number on your arm and leave yourself for dead, is essentially what he's saying. And now, this is, not only is this a Category 4 currently, they're not sure what it's going to be. It can't be any less than a 3, they don't think, when it actually makes landfall. They think it's going to be potentially a Category 4, and now it's turning left, like the nation, toward Myrtle Beach.
Right.
Which is, you know, that's that is a very, very, obviously,
we're golfers.
Anybody that plays golf has been
a populated area.
It's very densely populated.
Densely populated, and there is these, and if you go south of Myrtle Beach along the coast there, they have these beautiful communities that are not protected in any way, shape, or form. Tiny little barrier strips, not even, you wouldn't even call them barrier islands, just barrier strips along the way.
I lived in Charleston for 2 years. Charleston is not protected. It's amazing. The antebellum mansions along the Battery in Charleston largely remain standing the way they were 150 years ago. Tells you they don't build them like anymore, but when that water, when that tremendously wet water comes in with these hurricanes off the ocean, South Carolina, North Carolina, not protected. It's not just the barrier islands; they're going to get slammed.
I know this is a really serious situation.
So, and it's tremendously wet, tremendously wet.
It's the first time he's ever used that in a disaster context.
There were a lot of articles and conversations last night about the president being deficient as a consoler in chief. We saw a little bit of the stuff he talked about yesterday on Twitter during 9/11. Saying it's going to be tremendously wet. That the one place he may be deficient, even by Republican standards, is the consoler in chief. That he's not good stepping up and sort of showing empathy for people that are in harm's way.
True.
Like what he did with Puerto Rico and stuff like that.
John McCain. He's not really. Everything does come down to how he's feeling at that moment. And he's been told that this is bad. I think he's also been told that these are states that voted for him, and he'd better make sure he gets this right.
Wait till he finds out Puerto Rico voted for him overwhelmingly. Holy cow, is this story going to change? Have you read any of the Woodward book?
I have not.
I started it yesterday, literally yesterday. The excerpts, of course, take care of a good chunk of it. But the overriding thing is just a reinforcement of the title of the book, which is fear. Fear of the fact that he's the president, and fear is the way he operates within the White House, so that the people that work for him are afraid of upsetting him, and the people that work in Congress are afraid they need him. All of that in your fear area.
It is... To me, the hallmark of this entire situation is that people don't want to tell him no.
Yeah.
This really is an emperor has no clothes situation. At least from the excerpts that I've read, it does indicate to me that what there's more detail. And the book, I know, over the weekend, I'm going to just, nestle up with a warm fire when it's 100 degrees here.
Light some candles.
Light some candles. And keep the women away, apparently, is what that does.
Yes.
And put your Snuggie on, because I do know you have a Snuggie. I've heard about that.
My Tom's Killing Snuggie.
Quite
and I'm going to read this.
Painting.
I think that there is a very... this, to me, is the piece that really is alarming and should be alarming to Americans, is that the president, who sometimes isn't thinking about anything other than the political ramifications of something, once you're president, You don't have to think about the politics necessarily.
That's my issue. That's my central issue with him. He's not about the office. He's about Donald Trump. And you rise to the occasion with the office. Everybody slammed George Bush after Katrina. George Bush never said, how could you slam me after Katrina? One day after the people of Puerto Rico said, come on, man. You're the president. He's slamming Puerto Rico, saying the island is inaccessible and they were non-appreciative. God, grow up, you
lunatic. And then he threw paper towels at them.
There just was frightening and frustrating.
You know, yesterday on September 11th, they were rerunning that quote of him from the day of September 11th, talking to a local news station.
About the tall building?
About how he now has the tallest building in the Wall Street area. And you're like, he doesn't have that one thing. Now, and that's the thing. Everybody has somebody like that in their family who just, you know, says completely inappropriate things at all times, and they're always there at Thanksgiving.
But they're not the president.
Right. But those are the people that love him, right? Because they're like, I'm finally a guy who just says what he means.
Yeah, you know what? You're right. If we could take one person out of every family, that's the 35%.
My mother-in-law is that person.
Is that right?
Yes. She says whatever she wants, whenever she wants, and oftentimes inappropriate. And she also loves our president, so she's...
Most times it's a guy who comes in and goes, let me tell you something. I'm going to tell you something your parents won't tell you. You're a huge disappointment to this family right now. It's that guy.
That's right. That's the guy. Right.
Before you end with Roe, I just wanted to bring up, we had one of those calls yesterday, these staff calls that we do, and Roe basically called you out for not listening to your training of the new studio when we were talking about going paperless.
Well, Roe's got this fancy schmancy system that he's using, and I don't know who he's sleeping with to get this information, but it's quite impressive.
Jim Holland,
I believe. Holland, who has lovely scented candles in his office.
Kind of comes full circle, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All right, see you at 3. What's coming up, Steve?
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
White Sox Rally kicks off the Red Line Series Friday, September 21st. Got a broadcast live from Cork and Kerry. Some of us will. Are we there as well? We're doing a show from there?
We are there.
It's at 6 a.m. on. We'll be there.
Yeah.
Did I clear that? I don't think I approve of that.
We did it on your behalf.
And
am I available for that?
You are available. The nice thing is that we are included with the whole station's broadcast, because last time we were all at the White Sox broadcasting all day long, we were by ourselves at the stadium, and then all the other shows were at an establishment, and then we didn't get that camaraderie thing going. So
let me just inform the White Sox now, since they're not returning my calls, we'd love to have a few of your guys on. Let us know. Again, that's Cork and Kerry at the park, starting at 6 a.m. They're at 3259 South Princeton, and we'll take it through the pregame at 2:30. Details at WGNradio.com/event. Sponsored by Goose Island Beer Company and Virtue Cider.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Coming up, stories of matter from Steve Bertrand in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Wendy and Bill are here, and of course, if I find the right microphones for you, we're all going to be very impressed. All right, there we go. How you guys doing?
Hi, Steve. We're fine.
Good morning.
I can see you're not talking to me.
I was letting Bill speak.
What's happening?
This is the highest chair. Were you guys taping the dating game before we came in? Because the chair is up really
That's
high.
That's Rokan. He only likes it in the highest position.
Very high. Keep up on the ceiling.
The thing you don't know about Ro, it's totally an ego thing. He wants to be totally above the room.
The tallest one in the room.
He wants to be the tallest one in the room.
He wants
to look down on all of us.
Oh.
He does anyway.
Right. But this way it gives him a chance to physically do it. What are you doing today?
Rich Lankoff is coming on to talk about jury selection. He's going to ask Wendy and myself sample questions to see if we could possibly be
jurors.
Have
you guys done jury?
I want to be so badly. The last time I went to jury duty, all cases were dismissed for the day and they sent us home, and it bummed me out.
They should do a request system. Like, you should be able to go and say, yeah, I'd like to be on jury duty.
I agree.
Ryan Burrow said yesterday that that questionnaire was 106 questions long.
That's a long questionnaire.
For the Jason Van Dyke trial.
I would go through 50 and say, look, I'll stay or go, but no more questions.
Yeah.
Whatever you want.
That's a lot of questions.
One of the questions is, do you have bumper stickers on your car? Why would that have any bearing? I don't understand why that would be important to whether or not you could be a juror.
Do you know people with bumper stickers? I think that's
you
why.
Solved the mystery.
My kid beat up your honor roll.
Oh, yeah, all right.
I still have the Tommy Bartlett water show on my car.
I'm sorry. You're dismissed. We're back tomorrow. See you then.